And it's not just the CO2 we're putting out going skyward that's impacting our climate, but also what's impacting our personal environments, and that is what we put onto and into our bodies. We are only human, and that means that we have to be very careful to keep our machines running well, and we're starting to wonder what is in some of the products that we use every day. I've been talking about it actually on my show for years. There's a great new film out that's going to depict it. There's nothing like something that you can actually sit down and watch for an hour, hour and a half, and that really gives it to you in one sitting that can alarm people. Let's hope that's the case. Speaking about a new film just out called Unacceptable Levels, coming out in this country, I should say, it's already won an award at the film festival in Paris, the Environmental Film Festival. It's coming to the San Francisco Film Festival, Green Film Festival, in less than a month. And to tell us all about it and how he came to be taking on such a daunting subject, but such an important one, Ed Brown. Thanks for being on the program, Ed.
And thank you, Betsy. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate what you've done. I'm very good friends with Beth Greer. We walk our dogs together every week, so I'm really
aware
of...
Oh, I wish I could say that.
Well, she knows about
you. Beth's great. I love her, yeah.
Yes, and so this is something that I've been aware of, you know, for some time, of course, as an environmental radio host, I need to be. So not news to me, but news to a lot of America, and I'm so glad you've made this program that I guess really starts with your personal experience, as it so often does, activism gets started that way, to really demonstrate, hopefully to a wide group of Americans, reaching that general public is always a big challenge here, and that's why we want to promote the heck out of this film as much as we can, that this is something that they ought to pay attention to.
Well, that's true. You know, it's unfortunate that sometimes activism has to happen tragically. And that's what happened in the case of my story. My wife had an early miscarriage when she first got pregnant when we were together. And then we had a healthy child, my son, Braden. And then after he was born, after he was about 1 year old, we tried to have another child. And she experienced a second miscarriage. And it was right after that that really serves as the epicenter for this entire film, where after her second miscarriage, I sat back and I said, maybe this isn't mysterious. Maybe there's something really going on here. And it's not to suggest that anything, that we even have a solution at this point, because we don't know what caused the miscarriage, but it was because of that that I started really looking into what was going into her body and what was going into my body, and everyone's body for that matter. And that, in correlation with where I was working at a restaurant, and I was drinking a glass of water one day, and this is how I came up with the title of Unacceptable Levels, is that, you know, I was drinking a glass of water at work, and it tasted like I just dipped a glass right into the swimming pool, and right before I was about to take a sip, I thought, why does this smell so heavy with chlorine? And then I dumped it out, and then I stopped drinking that water. But it was right after that that I started learning more and more and doing a lot of research and looking at this terminology that kept coming up of, and there is an acceptable level of risk attached to so many different things. And I thought, wow, I can't even believe that there's an acceptable level of so many dangerous chemicals that are in so many aspects of our society today that this would be allowed at all. But it is, and it is the way that we live.
A good, very good point. Sometimes we all overlook those things. We're just so used to it, you know, acceptable levels. Yeah, well, someone should question that and say, acceptable in relation to what, you know, and optimum health, or, you know, mediocre health, or not dying too young, or getting too many diseases. We know our government's supposed to regulate this, but we also know our government is overwhelmed. Many Americans are not aware that some 80,000 compounds, is that a year, are introduced, used in products that are not tested?
There are over 80,000 chemicals in the system of commerce that we have today, of synthetic industrial chemicals, I should say. And these chemicals, not all of them are used on an everyday basis. Not all of them are used. In fact, many of them are not used in a lot of different processes that we experience every single day. But however, there are a lot of industrial byproducts and waste products, and on top of that, very dangerous chemicals. They're put into personal care products, for instance, and our food as well. And I found this to be astounding whenever I started compiling as much information as possible, really tackle this subject as well as I could in a film, because if we're confronted with dangerous chemicals through our skin, through our air, in our home, in the toys that our kids play with, in our food. How could I encapsulate all that very well in a film? And that's whenever I decided to piece things together by breaking them up into subjects and into distinct subjects. And then we tried to cover those as quickly as possible and give everybody as much information as I could in the 76 minutes that I have for running time. What it really comes down to is most people don't really think about this kind of stuff until after they get sick. Unfortunately, you can't see yourself beating a disease such as cancer, for instance. You can't know what that feels like just by living well, because it feels like there's no finish line. And unfortunately, it as so often it is the case that personal tragedy is usually the point whenever people are forced to wake up and look around at what's really happening in their environments and their media environments and themselves. Because essentially we are polluting our own bodies every single day. And these chemicals are legacy chemicals. Many of them are legacy chemicals. They were built to last. Many of these chemicals were great whenever they were created 20 or 30 years ago. Some of them even more so than that. And whenever they used to say things that were really, really built to last, that means they're not going to go away anytime soon. So pretending that this isn't an issue isn't really an answer for anyone that can give, they could give legitimately. You know, this is a really big problem. And every single person, and doesn't matter what, if you're rich or poor, no matter what your nationality is, no matter what your age is, this affects everybody, and especially children at birth.
Let's take a listen. Here's a 2-minute excerpt from the film.
We have 80,000.
80,000.
80,000 chemicals in commerce.
Companies are free to put a chemical on the market with zero information about its health or safety properties.
You look at some of the things that are on store shelves today and you can't believe it.
We have products on the market and nobody knows if they're safe or not, and nobody's testing it because they don't have to.
I don't want to take the chance of buying something that could be really bad for my family.
Well, that's the game. Chances are you bought them already.
Almost all of our consumer products are made up of chemicals, and a lot of those chemicals are harmful.
There are different chemicals, they're in different levels, and it's getting into us in every conceivable way possible.
And so your body is ground zero in the battle over pollution. That's the fundamental change that's happened.
Toxic chemicals that interfere with reproductive systems, that cause cancers, that interfere with our immune systems, that interfere with development.
These things can all be affected by very small amounts of chemicals.
Well, somehow we have industrial chemicals floating around in our bodies. You'd think one of those would be enough, but 232, it's kind of hard to say what's going on.
You know, when people start wanting to know about this stuff, when somebody in their family has cancer or a learning disability.
People say to me, like, what do we need to fix this system? I say it's simple. Everything.
And the concern should be not just about us, but more importantly about future generations.
In these next 10 to 15 to 20 years, you need to do something about it.
There are choices that people can make.
There are things that we can do about it.
Each one of us can be that beginning today.
The difference between a chance and no chance, the difference between some hope and no hope, is a huge difference.
Like my kind of film, and it also reminds me, Ed, of, you know, the climate change challenge, which we talk extensively about on this program. You know, it's overwhelming, it's huge, it's somewhat invisible, and we don't really pay attention until we've got a problem. In this case, with climate change, it's a global problem, and what we're going to lose, you know, with a stable climate and weather system, you know, would be unspeakably tragic in terms of the impacts that will continue to affect everyone and everyone, you know, to be born. This seems similarly daunting, and yet I like the tagline. Your slogan is a documentary about what goes in our bodies and what we can do about it. Does the film go into what can be done besides first get educated?
Of course. You know, there are certain aspects of the film that we needed to give people. If you're going to give people the problem, you certainly need to provide them with some answers. And I think that everybody needs to start at a particular point that they might find to be, you know, that hits home most for them as individuals and as a larger community. I don't give anybody really specific instructions or anything like that, but to mobilize people and to inspire them that this is an issue and that they can do something about it, that's really important. So I try to get them to go to the website at unacceptablelevels.com, and they can get a lot of information there and really get in touch with other nonprofits that are really, really doing a great job of tackling this issue head first. The Environmental Working Group, Safer Chemicals, Healthy Families, and Healthy Child, Healthy World. These are just three examples of organizations that are doing the work on the front lines every single day to try to make this issue really get in, under the skin, literally, of every single person out there. And I think this mirrors climate change in a big way, because a lot of people have a lot of difficulty believing that climate change is happening, despite the science, and there's an overwhelming amount of it. They can't see it happening in front of themselves, and they consider themselves too small to have too much of an impact. And conversely, when we look at our bodies, we can't really see these little chemicals floating around in ourselves, and we can't see them, you know, having an impact. So we might also be under the impression that it's not affecting us that way as well. And if I can get that through to people, which is exactly my task as a filmmaker, then I've accomplished my mission, and that's what I thought I did. And I hope that other people will feel the same way.
Well, I'm so glad you did make this film. I guess there's nothing really on the subject. This is kind of the inconvenient truth of chemicals. You know, I've been aware of body burden, you know, chemical burden, and these potential combinations like the toxic soup that can, you know, even if it is just trace levels of certain chemical compounds being, you know, found in umbilical cords and newborns and breast milk, which should be shocking, you know, enough alone, but it's the combination, and it's over time that really should raise some alarm.
I think that there's no question that it should, only because you look at the rates of cancer, which are rising dramatically all the time, the rates of autism, the rates of Parkinson's, the rates of asthma and other allergies. There isn't a single one of them that is in decline, especially childhood cancer. And when you consider that, if those numbers are climbing, that something has to be fundamentally incorrect in what we're doing. And, of course, our healthcare system is taxed enough as it is, to imagine that we could make a big difference just by educating ourselves and by doing the work that we really need to do, but we have to get educated first. And you mentioned earlier about the government being really stretched thin whenever it comes to tackling an issue like this. I would absolutely agree with that statement. And I think that they, along with other individuals out there, business owners, everybody can benefit by knowing more about this subject, and because, again, this goes back to, if we're all affected by it, just like climate change, it's difficult to really not understand or not believe that stuff is happening. And, of course, we still have that challenge.
I always thought, I mean, maybe 10 years ago when I first heard that they were finding traces of chemicals in breast milk, and I was so grateful that I'd already, you know, breastfed and you know, had all that newborn experience with my daughter, who's now 18, I thought that would really be, you know, like I thought inconvenient, so many of us thought inconvenient truth would be the wake-up call. And it's just amazing to me how many people, even mothers, you know, don't either seem to know about it or want to talk about it. And on some level, I can understand that, because it's just so disturbing, and what can I do about it? At the same time, you know, we just had this conversation in the first segment of today's show. You know, what will it take? We just passed 400 parts per million of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. We have had extreme weather. This has been documented, these chemicals in our bloodstream. I mean, it's not like it's hypothesis at this point. And I guess if we saw more illnesses, but maybe we are. You know, did you track like cancer rates, autism, ADD? Some of the common ailments that we have, asthma, just to name a few, that could be environmentally health-connected?
Yes, absolutely, I did. And you'll see that in the film. I have asthma. I was born with it, and I've had it my entire life. I'm 37 years old right now. And that was another reason why I was so interested in something like this, because, you know, there was no history of asthma in my entire family, and whenever I was faced with the prospect that this could very much have been influenced by the environment around me, that gave me a great reason to look into it even further. So what it really comes down to, the rates themselves, you know, the rates have gone from 1 in every 110 to 1 in every 80 children have autism. They're somewhere on the spectrum today. And people are still questioning, you know, why that's happening. And that's a good question. It's something that we absolutely have to get to the bottom of. In Minnesota, that's the highest rate. That state has the highest rates of autism in the entire country. Yet Iowa, which is directly bordering Minnesota to the south, has the lowest incidence of autism. So that raises some really important questions when it comes to clusters, what's really going on environmentally speaking. And that gives, and I can't provide every answer, but certainly this film should illuminate that those things are happening, those statistics are out there. It's available for anybody to find out themselves. And they don't have to feel, I think a lot of parents feel guilty about something like this. They feel like, well, maybe I didn't do enough, and maybe I feel like I could have done more if my kid is already sick, and that's hard. I can appreciate that. I've encountered a lot of women who have that kind of feeling, and you have to be sensitive to that, in which case I am. But they also have to understand there are ways out. There are certainly things we can do. There's no reason to ever give up hope for a challenge like this, and this is a challenge that, again, everybody faces. And if we ignore it, dare I say it, if we continue to ignore something like this, the cost will weigh upon us very heavily for every generation that we could possibly imagine coming along the lines over the course of the next 50 to 100 years.
Chemicals as well as climate change definitely parallels there. It's kind of understandable that people who are hit by these kinds of ailments and then find out there could be something that they did, you know, don't want to accept that. And some people, some percentage of parents, moms, loved ones do turn that into a cause and they become activists. But isn't there, I think on the part of the greater public, a sense that, well, our government must be watching this. They must be testing these things. They must be on top of it, just like I think there's a false sense of security about, well, if climate change were really an issue, we'd have, you know, policies in place and regulations. And there's an assumption that is, I guess, all too easy to believe if one really doesn't want to look at the reality.
Now, people do make that assumption. Whenever it comes to chemicals, if I'm going to go to the store, I'm going to buy a product, I'm under the assumption that somebody has checked this for safety. I mean, that's exactly why we have individuals in place today, not just the regulators inside of the Beltway. I'm talking about, you know, moderators and also individuals that are testing products every single day for that very reason. And unfortunately, whenever it comes to the law and the Toxic Substances Control Act, which is the law that's governing all of the chemicals that are in commerce today, many of the chemicals, and many of them dangerous ones at that, were grandfathered in to the entire economy and through this law in 1976. So we were looking at a law that is very old. It needs to be updated, and it needs to be scrutinized much more heavily than it ever has been in the past. However, take asbestos, for instance, and asbestos was a very, very dangerous chemical, and I shouldn't say was, it still is up to this day, highly carcinogenic. We know that it's deadly, and it causes a lot of health issues. They couldn't even regulate asbestos with this law, and whenever you look at it that way, and you think of some of the other chemicals that are out there, like pesticides, to think that the government was going to be able to do an effective job in regulating all these chemicals, I think is naive.
And I just thought of a place where, you know, the climate crisis and chemical burden intersect, and that would be mercury in our seafood. I'm one of many people who has high levels of mercury, probably from eating so much fish over the years, not being a big meat eater. I don't live in an area that's very industrial, but the output from the coal-fired power plants gets into the ocean, gets into the fish, gets into our bodies that way. And it's scary to think. We have enough challenges to the ocean in terms of, you know, overfishing and climate change and ocean acidification and dead zones to think what's going to happen to marine life, you know, in coming decades. But just thinking about the toxic element when, you know, fish is supposed to be something that's so good for us, you know, great brain food. I and many people I know have to really watch their intake of even sustainably caught fish because of that problem.
And right, heavy metals such as mercury are very, very toxic, and obviously you want to avoid them at all costs. And then you sit back and you hear something like that, which is the case, very high-level mercury, and in specific, like tuna, seems to be higher than other fish as well. But that makes people sit back for a second and think, well, if everything has toxic chemicals into in it, and if everything is bad for you, then they start to shut down. And that's exactly what we want to try to avoid. We're not trying to suggest that you stop eating fish. What we're trying to sit back and say, how do we cut down those mercury emissions? How do we actually cut down the intake into our streams and also to other parts of our wildlife and ecosystem as well simultaneously? I mean, that's a massive challenge to consider. But I do know this much. All of it comes down to chemicals. And if we want to sit back and we want to make the world a better place, and whether you're the CEO of DuPont or Monsanto, or whether you're a person just like me, I inherently believe that we all would like to see that happen. Now, corporations do have a mind of their own, that's for sure. But I would like to sit back and say, well, these huge corporations, I'm for one, am going to sit back and say, you know, we are going to have to influence them one way or another to make a change in what they're doing. They have so much heavy influence in D.C. as far as the lobbyist dollars are concerned. They have so much heavy influence over the entire infrastructure of this entire country, let alone the planet. We'd be putting our heads in the sand if we think that we can't, we have to leave them out of the equation, or that we would fight them tooth and nail. And we don't have the means to necessarily do that all the way. I do think that we can make a huge difference in and of ourselves together in a way that's nonpartisan, not Republican or Democrat or independent or anything, just as people together. We can make a difference, and that's the way we have to face this issue. It's not blue or red. It's a personal issue. And so that goes back to my personal feeling about this, is that we can't play politics with something like this, especially something that's as inherently difficult and poses such a threat to our entire species from the long on.
I agree completely with everything you said. I guess I've been maybe covering the screen beat a little too long. After 16 years, you know, I've been doing this long enough to see when the problems are viewed as, you know, maybe smaller, not quite as urgent, not quite as compelling. People are busy and life, there's always other issues. They don't pay attention. Then it seems like all of a sudden, overnight, it seems, perhaps to the public, like, oh, we've got climate change and it's out of control and it's urgent. And now with this, you know, these revelations, you know, one wonders, you know, where's that sweet spot between not big enough to get my attention and, pull up the covers. I can't deal with this. It's too much, you know.
Well, sure. I mean, it's natural to feel that way. And when I speak to audiences, that's completely understandable. And to sit back and think that I didn't do the same thing, I'd be lying to you. I mean, it does feel completely overwhelming. And after you get past that and you accept this as being a case, making small changes and small incremental ones are the only way you can get out of it, because to think that we're going to turn the entire nation on a dime is irresponsible logic. I sit back and I think it took us small incremental changes to get into this position, and that's exactly what it takes to get out. And there's a lot of great companies out there. Again, there's a lot of great nonprofits out there doing that work for you right now today. And all you need to do is ask for the help that you need, and it's out there, and it's even the National Institute of Health has a great webpage called Boxtown, which will show you some of the really problematic areas in your home.
Well, I'm so glad Unacceptable Levels is out there, and we're running out of time, and I want to make sure people know that if they're in the San Francisco Bay Area, you will be at the Green Film Festival. Please check out their website for screenings near you. It's such an important film, and I thank you so much for doing something about it, in this case, waking up a lot of people in the process.
Thank you very much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Okay, that does it for this edition of The Green Front. Next week I'll be running a Best of Betsy show, because I'll be on my way next Wednesday to Washington, D.C. to attend the Women's Leadership Summit on Climate Change and Energy. Very happy and proud and honored to be one of the 100 women that they recognized as leaders in our field to help kind of come together and talk to officials with the Obama administration about what we can do to better inform the public about the crisis we face. I'm not sure if the President or First Lady will be there, but wouldn't that be nice? So I'll report on that in 2 weeks. In the meantime, hope you've enjoyed this program. Check out the archives at prn.fm or at my website at thegreenfront.com. But we can turn it around if we just come together. We can turn it around. Thank you.